Good evening, one and all. Yes, a Wednesday, halfway through yet another week, halfway through July, and we're still here. Still nice in Connecticut where I am. Still nice bit of sunshine, but it's nice. It's like 70s, you know. That's a bit of breeze, nice 70s. I can live in this. It's when it gets to the 90s like we had last week. It's a little bit too much for me. That's the way it goes. But it was a nice day sitting outside just now, just telling my guests. My wife and I met some friends and we had a sort of an early dinner, if you like, early tea, whatever. And I didn't eat. Well, I did, but I had one of those great big milkshakes with cake on the top, and it was a special surf one. So it had like the imitation sand around the bottom of the glass on the plate, and the sort of surf and waves were sort of like cream with blue dye on it, and a great big cake and a surfboard and palm trees stuck in it. I'm looking at a picture now and I think, oh my God, I just managed them. But I just had that because I think if I'd have had, well, I don't think I could have eaten anything after it. So I'm a little bit high on sugar right now, as you may have guessed, but never mind. I am here and so is my guest. Now, what can I say about my guest? Well, there's a couple of bits I'm going to say for when we first start talking, because it's something we always ask sort of things on the show. And in this case, we've hit one that's correct. But what is she? She is a failed musician. We'll get to that as well. And an adopter of stray furniture. Yeah, I know. She's laughing. I'll tell you. Yes, this is going to be one of those shows, people. Anyway, I'd better introduce her, because on the show today, I have the one and only Amy Ziegler. Hi, Amy. How are you?
Great. Thank you so much for having me. I'm having so much fun.
It's a pleasure. And I forgot to say award-winning author. I mean, that's the important part. I should have said that first. Actually, talking about things like that first, I was watching a program on YouTube last night, and it was about the Victoria Cross, which is the sort of the highest award we have in England, military award sort of thing. And they were saying that it's been like 150 years or something like that, and there's only just over 1,300 people won the award in that time. And, because obviously it's not that common, though. I think it was in Zulu. In the film Zulu, there's like at least five won it at Rorke's Drift during that battle. Right. But one thing I never knew, and I love it when I hear that, pick up these things, that I never knew, that no matter what honours, awards, so the letters people have got after their name, if you have the Victoria Cross, that always comes first. So it'll be Barry Eva, VC, OBE, MBE, and Bart, whatever, but you've got to have the Victoria Cross first. And I never knew that. That's just something I picked up. So it's another useless bit of information that I file away.
We love that kind of stuff.
Exactly. Oh my goodness. I mean, so if you in your case, you've got a romance story set in the Boer War. It goes back to even, but in a war, and the person sort of bravely dies. In fact, I think it's 1 out of 10 live who've won the Victoria Cross. Yeah, it's normally all posthumously sort of thing. And then you can say it was so and so, and you can put VC, and you can say so you now know if you ever write that story.
I know where to put it, after their name, before the other recipients.
There we go.
The
well, as I said, as I said at the beginning, one of the questions we always ask is, when did you first start writing little stories? Was it as soon as you got older, crayon sort of thing? Well, in your case, it almost was, because you wrote your first book at a very young age.
I did. I was very lucky. I was living in Alaska at the time, and I was part of this program called the Optional Program. And the Optional Program was such that we basically had a list of everything that was due in our school curriculum, and it had to be turned in by, by a certain time on Friday. And you had all week to get it done. You didn't have to turn it in at any certain times. It just all had to be turned in on Friday. And so we had kind of a loose schedule in between Monday and Friday. And so it left us a lot of time to do creative work.
Nice.
And so one of the things that I did was I wrote stories, and my friend Sonia, and we're still friends. I mean, we're friends on Facebook. I haven't talked to her in years, but she illustrated these silly stories that I wrote. And as I started studying theater, I started writing plays that were just gosh awful. And, you know, I, in my young mind, it made sense to me that everybody had to have an equal amount of lines because I was very, I guess, egalitarian.
Yes,
that way,
yes.
Right? Like, oh,
fair is fair.
Yes, because I didn't want anybody to feel bad with a small shirt.
Yeah.
And, you know, and these plays, I mean, and these books were just awful. I mean, they totally didn't make sense. I was writing mysteries and the clues just didn't make sense. But I was in this environment where my teachers and my parents encouraged me to do these creative endeavors. And I really appreciate that. And I think that helped and went a long way, you know, as I got back into writing in my adult life.
There you go. See, there you go, people. Now, you're never too young because, you did this. And whereas, you know, people ask you later on, what do you want to do? You didn't really, you wanted to be a writer, but you didn't tell them because you were a bit afraid, weren't you?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is kind of something that you hide under your mattress until you can make enough money that you're a big enough name. I really do feel that way. Like, I still have a hard time telling people I'm a writer. I mean, I have 4 published books out under contract and 1 more in consideration and working on some other projects. And I still have a hard time because people go, oh, what have you written? And I go, oh, my gosh, it's not going to be anything you've heard of. You know,
yeah.
You're not Dan Brown or Stephanie Meyer. Or
They expect to know it, you know.
Yeah.
How many books come out each month, each day? You know, my book?
Yes. I think it was 60,000 romances a month or a day.
It was something like that.
Insane amount. Like, you're not going to know me. So it is a little embarrassing, and it is kind of like one of those things. Plus, people think that as a writer, you don't make a lot of money. You do it because you love writing, but heaven forbid, you can't support a family on that. And I know quite a few successful, some of them are published through small press. Some of them are published through self-publishing now that Amazon makes it so easy to self-publish. And some of them are published with the big traditional publishers. But yes, you can make money as a writer. I think one of the elements is don't give up. All through publishing, that was the mantra. Don't give up. Just keep writing. Keep pushing. And the more you write, the better you get. The more you publish, the more you understand publishing. And you will eventually get there.
Indeed. So. I always we have Steve Berry comes on the show every year when he brings it. Each year he brings a new book out and he comes on the show, tells us about his new one, tells us what's coming out next year and what he's working on for the year after sort of thing. So it's always good. And he always, you know, we always use him as an example that he spent 10 years trying to get his first book published. You know, he was rejected. He ended up having, I think, 8 to 10 books rejected. And then all of a sudden, his type of genre became, you know, people were looking for it. And they signed him up to 5 books, and now what has he got? 89 million copies around the world, or something like that. So
it's amazing.
I always tell
people, just keep going. Yeah. Just keep going. Like, you only fail if you quit.
Yeah. To my mind, and you know, I was a lot more in the sort of YA, though I did write short romance stuff. There's a book of my short romance stories. But is if you get a response from somebody, even if it's just like, oh, you know, I really enjoyed it, or in one case I've got like 3 generations of a family where the lady bought the book for her young son, and you know, doesn't do it, and she says she doesn't read normally, but he picked it up and he read it right the way through. And then she said, well, so yeah, I thought, well, what's it was good, he's really, so she picked it up. And she forgot dinner and everything like that because she was reading it all the way through. And lo and behold, she said the next day her mother was over and her mother picked it up and started reading. And I thought, well, what more can you ask for? 3 generations all seem to enjoy it. I mean, that's – if you make a difference to somebody, if you give somebody a bit of pleasure or something like that, to me, that's all
that
you can hope.
Really, truly the payoff. I have to say that's one of the reasons why – I've got 2 stories I'm going to share really quick with you. One of the reasons is why I started writing again seriously. And it was, I have really bad postpartum depression after I have my children. I didn't know it at the time, but I just really struggled. Like after every kid, but just my house went to pot.
Oh, really?
The necessities. I would just, you know, I was just living life one day at a time. And one day I was at the library and I picked up this young adult fiction book and I read it and it was healing to me. It like lit up something in my brain that made me want to like be a person again. It was really amazing. And I took that as like a personal mission that I was like, you know what? I want to do that for someone else.
Yeah.
Because it really was. It got me out of this depressive funk. It helped me, you know, reach that center of my brain that said, yes, there is pleasure and happiness in the world. And it was through fiction. And so I wrote my first novel, Baker's Dozen. It was a very silly romantic comedy suspense novel. And I was a little worried because it's a little racier than what I normally write. It's, I would say it was PG-13 mm-hmm. in American. That's what we call the slightly on the edge, but not quite bad enough to have anything explicit.
Yeah.
And I was nervous because I sent it to my mother-in-law. And my mother-in-law is this amazing lady, but she's also very, you know, proper in what mm-hmm. she reads. And so I was nervous about what she thought. And one of the things that that had happened in her life is that she had hit this major obstruction in her life, and it was really trying for her to, at this moment in her life, she was struggling some mental health issues and just having some economic reversals and all of these things, and she was not laughing. She was she had a very stilted laugh. She would just kind of go, ha, 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 because the stress in her life was so great that she couldn't even fully, like, do a genuine laugh. And so I sent her this book, you know, biting my nails the whole time because I was worried she's going to tell me I'm the biggest, like, you know, was going to the downside, you know. And she called back, and she was laughing so hard I couldn't even understand her. And she was like, oh, Amy, oh, my gosh, this book is so funny. She's like, I have to read you this part. I have to read you this part. And then she went and read this part, and she couldn't even make it through the second. She was laughing so hard.
That is great. I mean, I don't know about you, but I mean, I've even now, if I read my, you know, a couple of my books and stuff like that, I'm laughing when I'm reading it. And I think, yes. Why am I doing that? I wrote the blessed thing.
Yeah. I still find it funny, by golly. And she, after that moment, she had a genuine laugh after that. So all of these things, this laughter, this healing, this romance, all of these things, all these things that we look to romance and genre fiction and even literature can heal our souls, and it brings us connection.
Indeed.
And you know what? She was like, thank you. And my husband, you know, because after that, she actually had like a normal laugh. And my husband said, I don't care how much it costs for you to write, like go to conferences, you know, publish your stuff, buy covers, you know, get editors. And he's like, if you can do that for my mother, I want you to do that for other people. That to me is priceless.
Wow. There
and that
go.
Is why I write. That is why I write fiction. Okay. And why I write funny stuff too.
There you go. Because it's romance. It's you know, there's humor and everything in it, and definitely personal after my own heart in a way. But as you said, you've got four now, because that was your first one. What was the next one? Was that the
that was first one?
Summer of Sundays. Yeah, so was that the second one? Or?
The second one was my award-winning author, my award-winning one.
Your award-winning.
It's called The Swiss Mishap.
Mishap. Okay, it's, 2019. Yeah.
Yes, 2019. It was my second novel. And, yeah, it was really crazy. So in my 20s, I was a young missionary for my church over in Europe. Like, mm-hmm. when I was 9 years old, about the time that I was writing, I was like, I want to learn French, I want to go to Switzerland, and I want to serve a mission for my church. That was my three goals. That was it. Like, I had no other aspirations, really. I mean, at nine, I thought that was pretty grand and lofty.
Yeah.
And when you don't get to choose where you get to go, but I wanted to go to Geneva. And when I opened, we call it a call because it's like you're called to go.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have an assignment. And I opened my call and it said that I was assigned to Switzerland, Geneva. I was like, oh my gosh, this is destiny in the making here. And I went over there. And even though Switzerland, I don't know if you've ever been to Switzerland.
Yes, I have.
Switzerland
yes.
is, oh, good. Okay. So you know what I'm talking about. It is a beautiful country.
Yes.
It is full of beautiful people. They are clean. They are precise. They are very warm-hearted once you get to know them.
Yep.
But I really struggled, even though it's very much like America. I mean, it's not like I was going to Africa or to like the Eastern Bloc. It was Switzerland. There are people who are very, very rich and very, very kind and polite. Yep. And yet I still struggled. I struggled with the language. I struggled with just trying to fit in with the cultural things. And it was so funny to me. And I tried to keep a sense of humor while I was living, you know, for 18 months in a foreign country. And I just decided to write this book about some of the crazy experiences that I had over there. And and what's in the book is only a percentage, like a small fraction.
I can imagine crazy things.
I mean, I could write a series of books. And in fact, I already started a second one, which is coming out hopefully this Christmas, about some more experiences at Christmas time in Switzerland, because I was there in Vevey over
Christmas. Oh, nice.
But living in a foreign country, I think, gives you a vast perspective of the world. And I just thought it was so funny. And I had so many, I met so many people in Switzerland. It's really a melting pot. And there were people from all over the world. It was the first time I met people from Bhutan and Somalia and Armenia and Rwanda, and all of these people shared their stories with me. And I was like, man, I have got to write these down and I've got to share these with people. But none of that is in the book. It's all just the silly fluff of chocolate, of course, because it's Switzerland.
Of course, yeah.
All the mistakes you make living in a foreign country and not completely understanding all the cultural nuances. And, of course, there's a romance because I love falling in love. It's
there we go.
Feeling.
See, so, I knew you were just like me, you see. My book's a similar thing between England and America. So, and it's got romance in it as well, and a bit of sport and a lot of humor. And yeah, so very, very similar, you see. I love it.
I love it.
So
yes.
Then your latest one is the 2021. That's right.
August Blues.
Yes.
Yes.
Now,
August Blues.
This Dearborn Inn, is that like a group of books or what is it?
Okay. So I'll tell you what my I am published with a small press and I love them. Wild Rose Press.
Oh, I know. We have lots of people from them.
Yes, you know them.
Yep.
Yes. Yes. They are just such a nurturing, nurturing company. I have met Rhonda, she's the CEO. I met RJ, she's the other, like, co-starter of the business, co-founder. And I just love them both. And everybody that I work with and all my fellow authors just love them. And, what they do is they put together, a series for us to write in. So what they do is they pick a setting usually. The Summer of Sunday is a little bit different and I'll talk about that one in a second. But in this case, it was Dearborn Inn. And it was set in Vermont and in a fictional town called Willow Springs. And what they did is they set up like a whole like map and created characters. And what we got to do is we got to pick two characters from that town and then write stories around them.
Oh, nice.
Well, I had this little germ of an idea about this writer who met the critic who panned her book. And I was like, wouldn't that be funny if, like, you met the guy who panned your book and you were all like, you thought he was super hot, and then you find out that he panned your book. And you're like, what? And so I just thought that was the irony in the story, because I love stories that have irony. I think that it's funny. I think it's dramatic.
Yes.
I think there's a lot of tension, right?
Yep.
And so I was looking for the irony in the story. And so I was like, what if, you know, because that's how all great stories start. It's like, what if this girl, she has a father who is like this great, you know, writer. He's like the Stephen King of this world, right?
Yeah.
And she doesn't want him to know that she's a writer because she's not quite as successful, and she writes romances. Now, the person, of course, who's going to read this is going to be somebody who hates romances, and he's going to pan this book, but he's got to have a reason why he doesn't like romance and romances. And so I gave him this, like, tragic past to kind of give him, like, a reason why he would pan this so harshly. And then, of course, I make them meet at Dearborn Inn in Willow Springs.
Oh, there you go.
And so, yeah. And so that was kind of the idea. That's how that came about. And my sister-in-law, actually, it was really funny because, you know, I was writing all these action-adventure romantic comedies. And my sister-in-law, over, you know, a holiday, I went home and she's like, can you just write a normal romance? And I'm like, I don't know what you mean. She's like, you know, something that's not, you know, a mystery action-adventure romantic comedy. How about something that's not a crazy comedy where, you know, people are doing all sorts of crazy things? Can you just write a normal romance? And I was like, well, I don't know. I've never tried. So Dearborn Inn is dedicated to my sweet little sister-in-law who challenged me to get out of my comfort zone and write, like, what I would consider a straight romance. Like, no, I mean, it's still funny because I couldn't quite keep the humor out of it. I was like,
I know exactly. Yes, exactly what you mean. You try and write this story and then your romance hat comes on or your humor cat comes on and you can't escape it.
You can't escape it. Especially I'm like, well, my readers expect it now, so I'm like, and so there's a couple of humorous scenes in there, but it is kind of more like a straight romance where there isn't, you know, nobody gets killed, nobody's life is in danger, nobody is, you know, it's just a straight romance. So, and then The Summer of Sundays, which came out I think September of last year, mm-hmm. it was also one of those. And she gave us a challenge, Rhonda, our CEO, she said, write a story about ice cream
right.
and about water. Like those two things. It could be a lake, it could be a beach, it could be, you know, a river, you know, something. And I was like, well, I used to live in Alaska and I had just gone up a couple of years ago to visit my parents who were staying up there with a family friend. And I took my 12-year-old daughter up there and it was the first time that she had traveled to Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was trying to show her all my old haunts, you know, places that we used to spend my summers because my dad was an avid fisherman.
Right.
So we spent a lot of my summer childhood on the banks of the Kenai Peninsula, like Kenai River down there. And, I'm trying to think of some of those places. Seward, definitely. Homer Spit, all of those places
right.
are, you know, Nanuilchik, Deep Creek, all these places in Alaska. And so I was like, I want to show my daughter this. Well, while we were there in Seward, we actually went to this cute little ice cream shop. And I took pictures of it because it was just adorable, like little ice cream chairs, you know,
oh,
little
lovely.
Counter.
Yep.
You know, this. And so I took a picture of that and that always just kind of stayed with me. And so when she came, you know, she offered this challenge, I was like, you know what? I am going to set mine in a failing ice cream shop in Alaska because in Alaska, they eat the least amount of ice cream per capita.
I wonder why.
So, yeah, it's so cold. I mean, why would you want to eat Alaska? Arizonans, because that's my husband's from Arizona, and he eats ice cream in February. He's like, I don't know. It's always a good time for ice cream.
Of course it is. It's never not a good time. unless it's sticking to your tongue because it's that cold, right? Yeah.
Right, or if it's with this huge, you know, float cake and
oh yes, 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 yes,
that you had either.
Yeah, right? Yes, like, yes, I guess yes, that's true. I can't argue that.
Right. So that's how that came apart. And so I like writing from, you know, part of my history and these stories to make them meaningful to me. And so Seward is a place that's meaningful to me. And I set that there. And of course, it's a little silly. She has an ice cream war because she has to fight the guy that she really liked in college has to actually take over her lease for his company that's going to be moving in. And so she's like, nope, I'm going to fight for my failing ice cream shop. And so she starts making up all these funny ice cream flavors and trying to kick him out of town. And it's a hoot. It's really funny. People say that's their favorite part.
And it's in audio as well, isn't it? Is it an audio book?
It is. I actually narrated my own audiobook as
right.
well. Yeah, that was kind of crazy. I studied theater for, you know, a bazillion years. And so I was like, I'm going to try my hand at doing my own audiobook.
There you go.
So.
There you go. And what's your next one coming out?
So I actually have three, and I'm not sure which one is going to come out
That's being
first.
Greedy. Yeah.
I know. It's just crazy. It's a good place to be. It's a good place to be.
Exactly.
But I can't say for sure. But so I'll tell you what I have. I have The Baker's Dozen number 2, and it's called Certainly Will Die, and it's actually set in Scotland there.
Okay.
So in the British Isles, I guess, is maybe they call it the United Kingdom when it's actually including Scotland there.
Yep.
And I had to do a lot of research because I have never been to Scotland. I have been to England. That's as far as I've been in there. But I just looked it up, did a lot of research, asked people, talked to people. Watched movies that were set there. And so it's set there and that's about a kidnapping and of course, you know, the possibility of death and dying at every corner.
Right.
And then, so that one is probably going to be next year actually, because the other two are actually part of another Wild Rose Press series. So another series that's coming out and that I'm super excited about is the Wilder series. And the Wilder series is set in Wilder, Wyoming.
Okay.
And it's a Western. And it's a historical. So here I go. Mysteries, romantic comedies, straight romances, and now I'm going to write a historical. So
historical and
says,
a Western, yeah.
Yes. And this is also funny, too. It has to be funny, so it's hilarious.
Exactly. See, you're basically trying to take over all the bookshelves. I mean, when yeah.
Yes. I just want one on every bookshelf.
Exactly.
Bookshelf in the, it's so terrible because people say, if you want to be successful, write in a series, stay in a genre. Yeah, I do none of that.
Yeah,
so.
I know. You'd be surprised how many people flip from genre to genre. So if some people know straight away or almost straight away, that's me. Yeah, perhaps it was a past life. Perhaps
right.
I was in Victorian England,
yeah.
you know, sort of things like that.
Right.
But in your case, it seems to be, okay, let's just pick one.
Yes. Because I just love so many different things. Like, I do love historicals. Like, I read everything from Regency romance. I mean, I read a lot of nonfiction. I actually really love, you know, like both British history. I read a lot of British history, like the spelling, the everyone complains, oh my gosh, the spelling is weird. And I was like, I don't even notice like anymore. I just read so much British literature that I just, it doesn't even bother me. Not that it should bother Americans, but I'm just saying like, I don't even
notice. Oh, believe me, I can know all about it. Right.
yeah. It's all there. And so I was like, I'm going to try my hand at writing as a historical. So it's set in the 1879,
mm-hmm.
and it's about a girl from Boston who. So I don't know if you're familiar with Cyrano de Bergerac, which is a French play about the guy with the big nose.
Yes, a lot
of people know that. I had to explain it to a couple of friends, but so it's kind of loosely based off of that, where they wrote letters, and the good-looking guy needs. He wants a mail order bride, but he's a terrible letter writer. And so he asks his friend Cyrus to write letters on his behalf. And so Cyrus ends up falling in love with the girl who is writing Cyrus letters, thinking that it's actually the other guy, Christopher Peele.
So good.
So then she comes out to Wilder and has to figure out who she really is in love with. And so it's an interesting story. It's kind of fun. Of course, there's action adventures, there's a barn burning, train, robbery, all sorts of Wild West stuff.
Well, what has been enjoyable is really, really enjoyable is listening to you, because time is beating us. It's whizzed by, as it always does when we have fun on the show. So what I'm going to do now is hand the show over to you so you can tell everybody where they can find more about you and, of course, your books.
Yes. So I'm everywhere online. My name is the hardest thing to my watch keeps talking to me. I am everywhere online. I have a Twitter account which I check, I mean, maybe once a day. I am on Instagram. That's probably where I am the most. And those two are actually just my name, Amy Ziegler, but you have to be able to spell it right. And I cannot take credit for the extra special E. That was my mother. She slipped that in there. So my name is actually AmeyZeigler. So that's, you know, Instagram at Amy Ziegler and Twitter at Amy Ziegler. And then you can follow my Facebook page. That's AZ Author, you know, Facebook.com at AZ Author. I have a website. You can look at all my my books on there. It needs to be updated. These books come out and then I'm like, oh yeah, I got to update my website. And that's just AmyZeigler.com. And let's see, I do have a newsletter. You can sign up for that. That's actually probably my best way to get a hold of me to communicate with me is through my newsletter, because I'm really interactive on there. I love talking with readers. I ask them questions. I get a lot of feedback from them.
That's great.
Yeah, I have them do like beta reading and ARC reading for me. And then I don't know. What else do you want to know? My book?
That's fine, because people can find your books on your website. It's like I have been doing.
Yeah, they totally can. Yeah.
Well, Amy, thank you so much for being a guest. It's been really great chatting to you. I really enjoyed it.
Oh, my gosh.
Thank you so much.
This has been an immense pleasure for me, too, and I really appreciate you taking the time.
No problem. Thank you. Well, there you go. My guest today, Amy Ziegler, A-M-E-Y, as we said, extra A-M-E-Y, and Ziegler is Z, or Z as I would say, E-I-G-L-E-R, Amy Ziegler. And if you look at amyziegler.com, you find all the books and links and everything there. Plus, as you said, you can find her on all sorts of other things, Facebook, Instagram, all that. Newsletter that you can sign up for, all sorts of good stuff. Thoroughly, that sort of, those books, I just love all that sort of stuff, you know, where you sort of think it's one thing and then you've got the humour bursting through and the adventure and that. And as she said, flitting from genre to genre, you know, just shuffle them all in a pack of cards and deal the cards out, and that's what you're going to write today. But that's great stuff. Really enjoyed that. Well, that's it for this week. I'll be back on Sunday with my music shows from 5 to 6 p.m. Eastern. On newvisionsradio.com, which is where we are now, you will hear me with Those Were the Days, music from the 20th century. And the theme this Sunday is sailing. Think what songs we can get in that. That's sailing on the theme on that. And that's followed between 6 and 7 p.m. Eastern by the Swinging 60s. Music from the 60s, not just the British invasion. We now cover everything. So that's here. And then next Tuesday and Wednesday, I'll be back with a book and a chat. But until then, as always, we have one thing left to say. Don't forget...